same way that teacher treated you on that day in front of the whole class and you cried? Your grains of truth today. New Zealand doesn't taste as good as Zealand Classic. The game of ice hockey has been called into review due to allegations that it promotes violence towards Shakespearean elves.
It's a slow burner.
The very hungry caterpillar is being blamed for childhood obesity and all those kids who turn into butterflies. To introduce our panelists for this episode, it's over to the linear regression, Stacey Taylor.
From the University of Tasmania, Launceston campus, representing Monsters, it's Scott McAteer. Representing psychology, it's Rowan Johnson. From Monash University, representing animals, it's Carrie Farnsworth. And from Mazenod College, representing animation, it's Christian Bazzari.
The rules of Grain of Truth are simple. I award points to the panelists for their responses to ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is the MC Escher apartment complex. Whatever you do, don't take the stairs. Before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everyone. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panelists' topics? That is monsters, psychology, animals, and animation. And we'll come back to this at the end of the program. But I will give you a clue. 20th century. 20th century is your clue. But we'll now begin with round one, which is called the 90-second TED Talk. Each player must give a short speech on a topic relating to their field in 90 seconds. At 60 seconds, they'll hear this noise. When it comes to 90 seconds, they'll hear this noise, and which they must eventually cease and desist where possible. Scott McAteer, representing Monsters, you are first, and your topic is Edgar Allan Poe was intended as a children's writer. Scott, your time starts now.
That's right, David. Edgar Allan Poe was intended as a children's writer. He actually wrote all of his stories as fairy tales. In fact, he wrote them all as one fairy tale, and then they were split up by later editors. It was a version of Cinderella, and I'll now demonstrate. Once upon a time, or actually once upon a midnight dreary, lived Roderick Usher, weak and greedy, and his lovely young stepsister called Lenore. Now, Lenore was very beautiful, but her stepbrother was very mean to her. She'd spend all day cleaning the cinders out of the family mausoleum, and they'd call her Cinder Lenore, which was a bit rubbish. She desperately wanted to go to the ball that Prince Prospero was having while the Red Death ravaged the countryside. She said to her pet cat, Pluto in Boots, "Oh, Pluto in Boots, how I would love to go to the ball." And Pluto in Boots, because he was a magic cat, said, "Meow, well, why don't you just go? What's your brother going to do, bury us alive? That'd be crazy." And so she went. She had a lovely time at the ball. She drank Amontillado. She laughed at the antics of Pop Frog, and she danced with a mysterious stranger dressed as Red Death. And then she disappeared. And three policemen came to Roderick Usher's house and said, "Miss Usher, where's your sister?" And Usher said, "Do you hear it? Do you hear it?" "I don't hear anything, Mr. Usher." "What do you hear?" "The beating of her hideous heart!" And then he drew up the floorboards upon the floor, and there was Lenore. The Prince Red Death had found her, and she was there with the hideous black cat, and they all lived happily nevermore.
Can you think of any other authors that have been misinterpreted with their genres?
Oh, yes, yes. Lewis Carroll, of course, the Narnia trilogy.
C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis, yes. They originally intended, of course, as a horror story. I mean, Aslan does eat a lot of the children, but those were cut out when they were published.
Yeah, that's true. Is there any other favourite authors that the panel has that could be misinterpreted to be worse than they are?
C.S. Lewis Carroll was an interesting one, actually. A very little-known author, in fact. The Lion, the Witch and the Wonderland was one of my favourites, so I quite like that one.
Fabulous. Our next speaker in this first round is Rowan Johnson, representing psychology, and your topic is, we can learn a lot about our behaviour from monkeys. Rowan, your time starts now.
We can learn a lot about our behaviour from monkeys, and Herman Ebbinghaus in the 1950s, he was a psychologist that proved that, because back in the... he was studying attachment, because back in the 50s, people were banging on about, you, if you want your child to be strong and self-sufficient, for good God, don't touch them, don't cuddle them, put them in the corner, you can look, but don't touch. And so he got a whole bunch of tiny little rhesus monkeys, and he stuffed them in a cage, ripped them from the arms of their mother, and he put them in the cage. He put like a cloth monkey doll and a monkey doll that was made out of chicken wire. And the only difference between the two was the chicken wire one had a boob, so they could get fed from that. And he observed them over the course of a series of weeks, and they spent the majority of their time clinging to the cloth mother. And they only went over to the chicken wire one when they wanted a bit of a feed. And he did some subsequent experiments, of course. He sent in an animatronic spider to freak out the monkey, and they were just having a fit on the ground in the fetal position, and then he'd do it again with the cloth monkey and the wire monkey, and they'd spend the whole time clinging to the cloth mother, which is showing us that, you know, these little tiny monkeys, attachment and care and comfort was much more important for them than sort of food and other things like that. So, for dear God, when you go home tonight, cuddle your children, kiss your children, at least give them like a little tokenistic pat on the head, because hundreds of monkeys were put through emotional torture and eventually put down so that you could know that simple, obvious truth.
Is there any other animals that we could also learn psychological behaviour from, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Most of the sort of clinical trials that have ever been done just involve cutting animals up and cutting their brains in half. And did you know that if you cut something's brain in half, it doesn't function as normally as it would if it was kept whole?
I assume that was someone's PhD, right?
Well, we know that because scientists have cut the brains up and the animals were stuffed. So, yeah.
Thank God for science, right?
That's right.
When I was a child, my parent cut my brain in blue.
Our next speaker is Kerry Farnsworth, representing animals, and your topic is the evolution of stereotyping. Kerry, your time begins now.
So I'd like to talk about stereotypes, and people think that they're generalizations made about a group based on only a few observations in the field, but actually they're invented by an evil committee that consists of people like David Attenborough, Walt Disney, Mel Brooks, and Carl Gustav Jung. Now, this committee and its agents seek to disseminate their falsehoods about animals in order to make them easier to categorize. I mean, they say that foxes are cunning because they've kind of got like a pointy nose and it looks sort of like they're really sleek and evil, but they're just jerks that kill chickens. And now you see, David Attenborough was enlisted by the community many, many years ago to disseminate animal stereotypes. Now, the committee had already decided that killer whales, or orcas, were to be called killer whales because they had really pointy teeth and they kind of looked mean. His equivocal piece on orcas was named Wolves of the Sea instead of his original title, which was Pandas of the Sea, because they were black and white. Now, it's also perpetuated. Now, David Attenborough, he's a particularly evil agent of the evil committee, was sought to disseminate the most powerful stereotype of all, and that's men who are over 60 and have white hair are really trustworthy and knowledgeable. So this meta-stereotype has allowed the committee to disseminate almost for millennia, to infiltrate culture and shape the way people see other people and animals. So, for instance, if we didn't think of deer as Bambi or proud and noble creatures as they were, which is 8-foot-tall, muscle-bound idiots with knives on their heads that run in front of cars, I don't think Walt Disney's empire would be quite as large as it is today.
I was actually so engrossed I forgot to give you a ding
there. See, I was paying attention and I was like,
oh, Oh, I see. I'm terribly sorry. Our final speaker of the first round is Christian Bizzari, representing animation, and your topic is A Letter to Seth MacFarlane, Love from Peter Griffin. Christian, your time starts now.
Yes, an open letter to Seth MacFarlane from Peter Griffin.
Dear Seth, can we stop this? I mean, I like money too, and hell, the kind of blow you can get from that kind of money, it's just great. But it's just, it's stopped being fun, you know? And I'm kind of tired. After all, I've been a bartender, a mayor, death, a producer, school board president, reality show contestant, an undercover drug investigator, president of my own country, tobacco lobbyist, Renaissance Fair jouster, sheriff, TV producer, priest of the church for the Fonz, a sumo wrestler, pro footballer, author of erotica, news reporter, Superstore USA sales attendant, policeman, restaurant owner, servant, flight attendant, mascot, Calvin Klein model, doctor counselor at a bulimia clinic, a ghostbuster, a spokesperson for the Green Giant Tron, member of a Simon & Garfunkel, a security guard for George Harrison, a construction worker, one of the Wonder Twins, a painter for the Sistine Chapel, a singer in a barbershop quartet, a children's entertainer for terminally ill kids. That was a bust. Christina Aguilera's manager, Sandy Duncan's glass eye, Kay Fred's magic mirror, conductor of the Stamp People's Choir, synchronized swimmer, soccer coach, Uma Thurman's eye wrangler, butt scratcher, vendor, housekeeper, Robin Williams' starting point, and a whole bunch of other crap that sort of blends in with each other. So yeah, if we could just wrap this up, that would be good. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Conway Twitty.
I think it's very refreshing to see the creation tell bag out their creator. Do you think if there's anything that the Simpsons might want to say to Matt Groening at all?
Just stop.
Is that the common theme, just stop, with a lot of these?
What would they say? Why are we yellow? Well, everyone's jaundiced in Springfield.
That's right.
It's all got liver disease.
That they do.
And it's the duff.
At the end of that round, Rowan is in the lead by a gnat's wing. Our next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is divided into teams of two, and they must apply their skills to an application task. Kerry and Christian, I'll be challenging you to be our grain of truth welfare guidance counsellors. I want you to discuss or advise how we can deal with the following stressful situations. Some coping strategies, if you will. First thing is babies on aeroplanes.
Oh, well, firstly, they should really be inside the airplane instead of on the airplane. If you see one on the wing, scream.
Grab the attention of your closest William Shatner.
No one will believe him. Yeah. And really, I mean, they'll fall off eventually. So just keep calm.
What about being stuck standing up on a peak hour train?
Stand as close to the person next to you as possible until you unify with them to create one super peak hour beast. And then once you get to your station, you can just sort of butt off like a tapeworm. And then you just, that's it.
I agree.
What about having to attend a wedding you don't really want to go to?
Merge with the bride, like one sort of wedding beast, and...
That's your solution for everything.
Shut up.
And finally, seeing a friend's play that really kind of sucks and is not even interval yet.
Well, just play the games and be nice to the host, and eventually it'll all be over.
So it's good.
What?
Ladies and gentlemen, Kerry and Christian. I believe that calls for a zing.
I said be nice to the host.
Scott and Rowan, I'll be challenging you to a game of MacGyver. You'll be having to detail your escape from a dinner with your in-laws using the following items. And I can pass you the items here. It's a paperclip, a ginger toupee, two slices of wholemeal bread, a packet of jelly beans, a wristwatch, and 20 centimetres of shoelace.
Oh, okay. Well, the paperclip I always use first because I'm often chained to my chair when I go and visit my mother-in-law because, you know, I am dubbed MacGyver the Bastard by her because I always try and escape because she can't cook a very good roast. And the ginger toupee I then don after that because my wife's actually a ginger and I, you know, put that on to kind of quell the kind of, you know, furiousness at my escape of the chair. And Scott's normally there, and he...
That's when I bring out the two slices of wholemeal bread. Now, one lone fact about wholemeal bread that it's highly flammable, and if you rub two slices of wholemeal bread very rapid rate, they will combust, making a big smoky heat. Then you throw down the packet of jelly beans in case they try to follow you. They'll slip, they'll fall. It's sad, but...
And then I use my wristwatch to, you know, time exactly 47 seconds. Because 47 seconds is the exact amount of time it takes them to kind of get up and run towards me. But it is a long time. They are quite old. And they, you know, this happens every week. They trip on a packet of jelly beans every week. Their hips have been replaced. And 20 centimetres of shoelace in that 40 seconds has been, you know, drawn across the floor. And they trip again. And it's always the second trip, because they've fallen once already, but it's always the second trip. That is their weakness.
And you run through the door, you just hear the sound pop behind you, I've fallen and I can't get up.
I've fallen and I can't get up twice.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott and Nolan. At the end of that round, Scott is in the lead by 7.3. Our next round is called the Reverse Spelling Bee. I will give a word and its spelling to each team. One of them must give a definition of the word and the other must use it in a sentence. The team with the clearest definitions and best structured sentences will win the round. And the first will be over to Scott and Rowan. And your word is Burdonegan. Burdonegan.
Burdonegan is a particular kind of Scottish fake beard that was popular in the 17th century.
His Burdonegan was chafing him.
Thank you. Christian and Kerry, your word is ovulise. O-V-U-L-I-S-E.
It's when you visualise the obvious. Duh!
Christian visualised the obvious.
And therefore he...
ovulised.
Thank you very much. Next word over here is balete. B-A-L-E-E-T.
Well, sheeps are generally bleat. They go, bleh. Is it a sheep, man? Yeah, it is a sheep that they go, bleat, like that. And a balete is when two or more sheeps do it, but they don't do it in sequence. So it's kind of like one starts and goes, bleh, and the other one's going, bleat, bleat, like that. Yeah.
Father Jones listened in a dark air. He could hear the sound of his sheep bleating. And he knew all was well.
Fabulous. And a final over here, it's the term apple punch, A-P-P-L-E space P-U-N-C-H.
Your date's not going well. The fruit platter arrives. In a flurry of furious movement, you pick up the apple and punch your date in the face. Apple punch.
In order to placate her desire to not offend her date, but leave quickly, Sylvia apple punched and ran.
Ladies and gentlemen, the medalists. At the end of that round, Rowan is in the lead by one cat and dog. Our next round is called Stumble, Mumble or Bumble. The players are challenged to give impromptu responses to the topics and questions that I give them. If they stumble, mumble or bumble, I can squeak them out like this and give the topic to somebody else. Or alternatively, they can interrupt by making a dinging noise. Our first speaker is Rowan, and your topic is a simple, easy way to test sanity.
A simple, easy way to test sanity is to stand next to somebody and go, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you all right? You don't look okay. David said that you're not okay. I'm really worried about you. Mum's worried about you. Look, I've got written evidence written by a doctor. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And basically...
Are you okay? Are you really okay? I mean, you look okay, but I don't think you're that okay. I mean, the doctor's evidence, it said that you're not okay. So I think you should really check and see if you're okay. But
then, if they're not okay, they'll say, I'm not okay, and they'll start crying, and you'll go, you don't look okay. Are you okay? You're crying. Look at you now. You're crying. You're crying all over the written evidence that I've given you. Please stop crying. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And then you combust into flames.
That's absolutely right. Thank you very much. I'm going to throw it over to Kerry. A chicken should become a CEO.
This is, of course, assuming that the chicken indeed has a head. Because the chickens without the heads, they just tend to run around a lot and they're not going to be able to organise everything. So the chicken with the head can clearly become a CEO because they know exactly what's going on. Have you ever...
I'm sorry, CEOs don't know what's going on. I'm going to throw it back over. I'm going to throw it back over to Scott to take over.
Well, the chickens should be CEOs because they are focused on the bottom line. They are focused on the buck, 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 bucks.
Christian, I'm going to get you to continue with the next topic, which is how should the Simpsons TV series end?
Abruptly.
Thank you. I'm going to continue with Rowan. Fluffiness is the vital ingredient for success.
Fluffiness is the vital ingredient for success. As living proof, the other day I put on this fluffy sort of man coat, and I walked down the street and everybody went, hey, looking good, nice man coat, and I said, yep, thanks. And then I got, like, someone just, like, aimlessly kind of spat out this piece of chewing gum and it stuck to my new fluffy man coat, and everybody on the street came over and they were all trying to give me solutions. They're going, oh, maybe if you, you know, rub a little child's head on it, or cover it in Pepsi, or, you know, lick it away. And everybody was trying to help me because I was successful with my man coat.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mancook. And finally, Scott, the 80s were the best decade of all time.
Oh, the 80s were the best decade of all time. Not just the 1980s, but also the 1880s and the 1780s. Jack and Ripper lived in one. I'll let you figure out which. Transmission Van was also big. I don't know which that's worse than Jack the Ripper. You decide. The 1980s, of course, had Reaganomics, or voodoo economics as it was sometimes called, which is the founding of the trickle-down effect, which is when rich people just kiss down on you.
Thank you. I'll get Christian to continue on with that, with the final topic, words that don't exist but should.
Blurt, beep, boop. Really should exist, because that would justify what I just said to you all and make me seem really quite fluent and intelligent. But another word that should exist is falgorific, which would describe a state of being.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the panel. And it looks like Christian was in the lead in that round, but I will have to total the points. But before we do, it is now time to reveal the answer to our Grain of Truth connection challenge. Did anybody on the panel get the connection between monsters, psychology, animals, and animation?
Is it Monsters, Inc.?
No, it is not Monsters, Inc.
It's not Ren and Stimpy.
No, but I'm just curious to know why Ren and Stimpy would be.
Well, I think people's reactions to Ren and Stimpy is a fairly good gauge of their psychological well-being.
What?
Ren and Stimpy are both animals and monsters at the same time, and they're animated.
No, well, I suppose that's fairly good. I quite like that. The connection I had there for was including 20th century would be World War II, would be my connection.
Okay.
Not too dissimilar from Ren and Stimpy. But psychology was a key play in the mindset of people, the way we think about people in war and so forth, and making the enemy to be seen as monsters, as demonstrating propaganda. I think one of the most horrifying things I ever read or saw were looking at the list of anti-Jewish propaganda with the Nazi fairy tales, which was just one of the most horrifying things I think I've ever read. But then again, the Allies weren't doing terribly much better when we had Warner Brothers making such wonderful animations of Snip the Nips with Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. That's the one where he hands out ice creams with grenades hidden in them, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. but also animals were used in warfare in Russia to try and blow up enemy tanks that they had Russian dogs trained to sniff under tanks.
The Russian dogs.
And the idea is that underneath the tanks, they would in training, they would put sausages and things like that underneath for the dogs to find them. And the idea is that when in combat, they would strap explosives to the dogs and send them out.
But in that hot dog! No, sorry.
Well, I'm sure you were quite a blast with that joke.
I thought I'd blow them away with it.
It's funny, because it's awful. and now it remains for me to total up the points, and the winner of the MC Escher apartment complex is Rowan Johnson! And that's the end of the program, and I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the recording at the first Saturday of the month at 1 p.m. at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow, and on Twitter at grainoftruths. It now leaves me to thank our panel, Scott McAteer, Rowan Johnson, Kerry Farnsworth, Christian Bizzari, our announcer, Stacey Taylor, our composer, Matthew Padcraft, Damien Sutton and the Wesleyan. I've been your host, David Evans. Have an absolutely splendid day. This has been an awful joke at the expense of others' production.